Hello guys, this is Clint Locklear from Trapping Across America. I'm down in Mississippi on the quest for a few back straps, possibly pick up some stuff from Chip down here to expand a pan. We've got two young men with us that we're going to talk about. I'm going to be the color commentary on this one for a little while. Chip was going to talk to them about what it's like being in the trapping business as young men. And I think before that, Chip, you were going to talk about an NTA alert that caught your attention.
Yeah, I sure am. Guys, we had had an email come across. I'm sure many of you may have actually gotten the same email through the NTA. But something that's pretty important that came out is actually pretty cool as well. It looks like we're finally kind of on the winning side of one of these things from the trapping industry almost. And so let me just kind of read you, for those of you that may not have seen this NTA alert that comes across, and some action that we probably need to kind of get behind and maybe make a call or write a letter or something to senators. But this is what it says. Is NTA alert, U.S. Senate Committee approves Bipartisan Sportsman's Act. The Bipartisan Sportsman's Act of 2016 has passed out of committee, and now it is up to us to do everything that we can do to see that it gets passed. This bill makes up the Bipartisan Sportsman's Act include the most critical areas of the hunting and conservation community. This includes a key provision sponsored by Senator John Barrasso of Montana, directing the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to remove gray wolves from the endangered species list. Despite greatly exceeding population targets for delisting, anti-hunting groups have for years successfully used the federal courts to keep the wolves protected. The act revises a variety of existing programs to expand access for hunting and fishing and recreational shooting. The bill would also require land under jurisdiction of the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service must, by default, be open for hunting, fishing, recreational shooting, unless the managing agencies finds cause to close the land. The language will provide hunting and increases hunting access on millions of acres of public land, and perhaps most importantly, and this is in big bold letters, and this is very important, trapping would be included under the definition of hunting for the first time ever in federal law.
That's cool.
That is good. That's good stuff right there. That's what we need, guys. This is almost done here. The attempt by Senator Cory Booker, as a Democrat from New Jersey, to include a ban on trapping on the 150 million acres of National Wildlife Refuge failed. He tried to block all trapping on any National Wildlife Refuge. We were successful there. The NTA organized a phone call campaign. We got that blocked. In closing here, I'm just going to read verbatim the last couple of paragraphs here. The committee also rejected an attempt by Barbara Boxer of California to remove language preventing the EPA from regulating lead and ammunition. That's good too, another win. Senator Boxer is a regular opponent of pro-hunting measures. She has committed to publicly fight the Bipartisan Sportsman's Act on the floor and is seeking to organize a filibuster. Sportsman's calls are needed immediately. Please contact both of your senators and encourage them to support the Bipartisan Sportsman's Act of 2016. And there is a link here. You can find the contact information for your senators. Well, that's just a link to the senators, assuming, but you probably know who your two senators are if you listen there. So this is still in the Senate right now, but it's out of committee. I think it'll go to the Senate floor. If we can get this passed, it'll go to over to the House, I'm assuming, if I remember how that works. And we'll see. Maybe we'll have a different president by the time this gets there. But
So Boxer and Booker are the ones that didn't want it to happen.
Yeah, that's right. Imagine that. So, but it looks like we're finally winning one. I like the idea that we were able to, still be able to trap at least on some of these refuges. And it sounds like something that we need to do. And NTA was behind a lot of that. So I'm kind of kudos to those guys for standing up for what we all believe in.
Can you imagine, though, we have to get a bill passed for us to use our own land in our own country with its own people? That's nuts.
It is nuts, but unfortunately, it's the world in which we live, I'm afraid. But, well, we Glad you guys came down. Just y'all hadn't been here just a few minutes here. Yeah, literally,
we're still in road lag. So that's the reason I'm giving him the reins here.
I bet. But one thing, Clint and I, we got a couple things we're working on and need to visit. But also, we're going to try to fill the freezer a little bit. We're getting kind of toward the end of our deer seasons and different things. So we got that, but. We're talking about while we're going to be together, we ought to do a radio show. And one thing that popped into my mind, I thought would be super interesting. Clint, you got Travis. Travis, introduce yourself.
I'm Travis Johnson. I'm from Bledsoe County, Tennessee, and I work with Clint.
Awesome. Good deal. Good deal. And how old are you, Travis?
18.
18.
I just graduated high school.
Gotcha. All right. Well, also sitting here is my son, Bailey. Introduce yourself.
I'm Bailey Davis. Right here in Philip, Mississippi, and half owner in Expand a Pan with Daddy. And I'm 18, pretty much just out of high school, in paramedic school now. And
you're an Ole Miss fan too, right?
No.
No?
not at all.
So I thought it was really cool and almost ironic, if that's the right word, that... you know, Bailey is, if you order any Expand a Pans, then there's about a 99% chance that Bailey's fingertips or fingerprints are on those somewhere. We're just going to kind of go out on a limb and say that if you order a jar of lure or a jar of bait from Predator Control Group, that I bet you that Travis's fingerprints are on those somewhere.
Guarantee it.
And so I thought that was a really, really neat parallel. And that's something that I think probably a lot of times goes overlooked. You know, a lot of times it's pretty easy to listen to Clint or listen to me or meet us at shows or conventions or something and listen to us rattle on. But sometimes the stories of the guys behind the scenes are really cool. And I thought maybe we'd kind of try to bring those out a little bit. So.
Well, one thing, yesterday I was looking for some video for a project I was working on, and I came across a video of Mr. Johnson here. It'll take me a few days when I get home to find it again because my videos are a mess as far as organization. But I think it's a good point. Guys of our age, you know,
mm-hmm.
you see a lot of the younger guys, and I'm sure our parents did the same thing, you know, good grief, how's it going to function in another 20 years when we're gone and they don't want to work and all this? And the video actually was when you were 16.
Yeah.
And I went out and it was in the middle of winter. And this is before we got our new shop, which we're going to have to now move back to the other shop, the old shop. But it was there's no heat in there, none whatsoever. And it was like 9 degrees, and I go out there and he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do, putting lure in bottles. He's in a metal chair with a heater under it to heat the metal while he sits on it. But he didn't leave and he never bitched.
That's right. That's right.
That's cold.
That is cool. Well, I think that, you know, it's 2016. I don't know, even know how that happens, but. Guys, I really and truly think that y'all are the exception of folks in y'all's generation. I think that if you look, y'all correct me, y'all, I don't want to do all the talking, y'all talk, but I'm just thinking if you looked at 10 guys, Travis, that you graduated from high school, 10 guys, Bailey, that you graduated from high school, y'all both graduated this past May from high school, what are they? Are they working? Are they rolling sleeves up? Are they sleeping to dinner? Are they gamers or on the computer? What are those guys doing?
Well, it's a rough sight, that's for sure. There's a lot of gamers, there's a lot of, you know, kids doing bad things. And I mean, there's a few good people, but it seems like more and more years come along, it's getting less and less good people. So it's kind of getting bad, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything to add, Bailey?
No, I mean, I agree with him 100% there. It's the same way. Right down here is the good folks are dwindling down as the years go on. I've seen that.
Well, I go back to looking. This is more a question for Clint. You know, I'm thinking back, and we're, you know, we're talking about trapping. We're going to talk about trapping, but before we just really dive off into there, I'm thinking back, Clint, it hadn't been, but, you know, it doesn't seem like about 2 weeks since you and I were that same age. Well, I can remember it very well. Yeah.
I still think I should be about 23.
Yeah, yeah. That blows my mind. I mean, you know, and of course, Bailey's 18, but he was born about 3 weeks ago, it seems like. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's... But I remember a little bit of the same kind of thing going on then, thinking, you know, golly, another 10 years, there won't be any good guys left. I mean, you know, and so I don't know what's, I mean, is this a generational thing or is it a,
what it seems to me now is no one was going to, if you wanted something, you had to figure a way to generate the money to get it. And, you know, the idea of living at home to your, you know, 35, which seems to be common now, it was never thought of. And kids seem to be so coddled where if we wanted to generate money, especially in the country, which I'm sure we were growing up kind of the same way, it was rough to make money. Mm-hmm. And you really mm-hmm. had to work at it.
Yeah.
And I think that's one way, because parents don't want their kids doing that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They want mm-hmm. them to be, you know, sit at home or go to the soccer game or the football game, or, and it's just radically changed. I think yep. there's too much coddling.
I absolutely. I think another way to say the exact same thing is everybody gets a trophy, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
when we were growing up, we didn't get trophies. Yeah, you know, whoever won got the trophy, that was it. Everybody else is, you know, they went home without it. So
no, that's definitely a foreign concept. I mean, it is weird, but it is. I mean, I do think a lot of, I don't think my cousin's going to hear this, so I'll talk about him. But, you know, he grew up in a very conservative house. He went to college. He got crazy hippie liberal. He went and lived almost in a little farm commune thing. He met a girl, figured out it's actually nice to have income, so he went to work in a foundry. And then he had a bunch of stuff get in his eyes, and he figured that wasn't the best thing. He already had his college degree. Well, then he buckled down once reality kind of smacked him around a little bit. Now he runs one of the biggest restaurants in Chattanooga.
Oh, wow.
But it took him a while. I think that's the biggest difference, is it's taken so much longer, it seems like, for the maturity to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where if you didn't have maturity when we got kicked out at 18 or 19, you just went hungry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's kind of gets into a little bit of some just kind of a rough structure. We don't have an outline for this show, but I would just for I think it'd be interesting. Just kind of guys, y'all tell us a little bit about what y'all when y'all come in the shop, when you come in the lure shop, or Bailey, when you come in this shop and. You ready to just kind of give us a little rough rundown? Don't give away the secrets, but don't give away the store. but give us a rough rundown about what your responsibilities are, because I think in a lot of people's minds, you know, they can there. Well, there is definitely there's different structures and different things that people can do. Some people, you know, they just straight manual labor. There's other people that can, you know, actually go a little bit further than that. There's other people that can do the design stuff. So y'all just kind of give us a rundown of what y'all do.
All right. Well, first thing I do when I go in there, you know, depends what he has for me. You know, sometimes we kind of like to do a little outside work, which that's all fine and dandy. I like doing it. But, you know, when we're in the liver shed, you know, I bottle the bait and liver, you know, make sure, you know, it gets filled up to the right point.
We've had
know.
Several conversations about that.
Yep, yeah. Yep.
But some days, you know, we do a little packaging orders and stuff like that. A lot of them to F&T. And mm-hmm. who's that other one, that new people?
See, you do some to Jeb. You do some to yep. PCS. Hilltop out of Iowa.
Yeah, Hilltop. That was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's... like when you come in, I mean, it's amazing to me because I've already worked all day by the time he gets in. Mm-hmm. So I'm like ready to, so I just give him a list pretty much and I walk away. And, you know, once he got the hang of stuff, you know, he's there. You know, that's the reason I told him. I said, you know, we'll figure out something. You're not allowed yeah. to go anywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to go anywhere else either. I mean, I don't want a job where I'm behind a desk all day, you know, in an office having some mean boss or even in a factory. I mean, I don't want to go to that. I mean, I don't want to risk my life for a company, you know. It just it ain't worth it to me, you know.
Sounds like you may have had a little influence rubbing off on you.
Oh, we have many philosophical conversations smelling skunk and rotted meat, yes.
Exactly. Buddy, what's your daily routine when you come in the shop?
Well, I come in and figure out what all we've sold the previous day or two and get on the computer and cut what needs to be cut and get them all bent right and packaged up and...
Well, how did you learn to do the? Are you kind of a techie?
Not really. I mean, I just.
So, but the computer stuff. I mean, that seems pretty complicated. With.
Well, a little bit. I mean, I went in there.
Now, does he actually get you going in the right direction? See, yeah, I have a feeling this is the way it is.
He absolutely did, and the machine. It's really and truly, I think Bailey actually absolutely is better at the machine than I am, hands down. And it's because he's, you know, more skilled at the computers and all that. I think, and I'm not a computer tech guy, but I'm also not computer illiterate either. I mean, I know my way around enough to do what I do. And I know how to use Excel. I know how to use Word. I know how to use the basic programs, you know, check writing programs and that sort of thing. And to me, that's the way I look at our program is our metal cutting. It's just another application. It's another program. It's just like Excel or just like, well, I think he just came more natural for, wouldn't you say? I mean, in the early days, especially.
Yeah, a little bit.
I learned a bunch from you. And then I also had some things that I figured out and turned around and taught you. So it's kind of been a group effort.
Yeah.
I mean, you track too, right?
Yes, sir.
And do you feel like the expanded pans make a big difference?
I do. I mean, it's bumped me up on my catch rate a good bit.
And so, I mean, I'm assuming though that has to give you a lot of pride though when you're sending that out to other people to use.
It does. It sure does.
On the getting a little bit more into trapping. I had a text message about, what was it, a week or 10 days ago about you, Travis.
Yeah.
Tell us what your big news was here. Was it last week? Is that when it was?
Yeah, it was last week, yeah. It was a week before we came here. But I caught my first coyote, you know, been trying for about a year and this year. And the season's been open since November. And I got started about middle of December, I guess. And... just wasn't having no luck, but finally it happened, you know. But it's always good to come back out of school and go and check traps and finally get something. But I'm used to catching. I caught a little bit of coons, but mostly possums, and that got, you know, it's still fun, better than nothing. But
there might be some guys listening that would argue that. I don't know. So what did you tell us real quick about this? Did you use your own lure that you guys had made?
And... yeah, I used Federales.
Cool.
And gator bait. I used it.
Cool.
And but I actually gave the fur to the landowner of it. He always wanted one. I thought, hey, I got Clint gave me a bobcat skin a while back, and I mean, why not, you know, give to others? So.
Yeah, awesome. But, awesome.
Yeah, trapping's got its advantages. The way I met Travis is his dad has a grass cutting service, and I'm very unmechanical, so I can't keep a lawnmower working past 2 years. So he was one of the ones that came out, and we got along, and then I met him. But his dad would always, you know, I'd be out in the lure shop before I had any help, you know. He'd open the door, and I'd have all that fur hanging in there, and I'm underneath bottling, you know, like a little troll. And he'd go, wow, look at the bobcat. So it was really cool because if I got low on money, I could, like, you know, dangle one of them things in front of him to get a free.
Barter for the for lawn services. Cool.
He's waiting for a mountain lion. He wants a mountain lion.
That's a year's grass cutting right there.
That's cool. So kind of back to the same question that, because I love this stuff. The same question that Clint just posed to Bailey, it was, how did that feel, Travis, knowing that you had something to do with, obviously you may not have made the formulation of Federales or Gator Bait or whatever you use, but it was stuff that you touched, you mixed up, you put in the bottle, you used, you went and set. I mean, that's got to, you know, just the same thing, same way as Clint was talking about, you know, you cut these and you know it made a difference. I mean, you bottled that lure and you knew that, you know, that coyote was not going to step there besides actions that you did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, whenever I seen videos, you know, on YouTube of him with the Federales or in Raider or whatever it was, I always think, hey, I bottled that, you know. I mean, it's pretty cool, you know. But,
well, I mean, I would assume you kind of feel as much pride as I do. You know, people post stuff on Facebook and, you know, I caught this with this and this. And you know that you had something to do with it. He still don't know the formulas.
Yeah.
He's got an idea on something.
That's right. I got you.
I know the smells, though. Pretty good.
Yeah. Well, y'all's is not terribly bad now. Besides the Gator Bait, I don't know if I can handle much Gator Bait.
See, I think the sweetness of the mink and the primal paste bait is worse.
Oh, really? Wow.
The sweet and rank is worse than rank.
Gator Bait's worse than Federales. I can't.
On the kind of the same idea of that, and sticking with the trapping, Bailey, you had a lot to do. Late last spring into the most recent product that we developed, and you started with the with our Conibear pans, with our treadle pans on there. Tell us a little bit about kind of, because I was trying real hard to get you into the mindset of thinking and figuring out, and we had been, you know, we've been using our boxes and when we went to those pans and started developing them. Tell us a little bit about that process, and because you were, you know, I just almost insisted that you, probably to the point that we didn't see eye to eye on a few of those things.
Yeah, it's but, not Norman Walker.
So, but this is one. I mean, it just kind of goes hand in hand with what we're talking about. It's one that I think would be really cool.
Well, when we was making the Conibear traps, it was a little unusual compared to the traps that we've been doing. So you're trying to put a flat pan in a Conibear, it folds up, and just trying to get all that worked out and all the kinks worked out, and it was a time in itself, but we finally got it working. And
you know, we approached that the other way, and then it's kind of the light bulb moment is when we figured out we could turn the whole trap upside down to what we had mm-hmm. been. You remember back early we were trying to come up with the idea of the way we're, you know, the way we'd always set the Conibears with the whiskers on the top, but I think that actually may have been, well, we may kind of hit that idea about the same time, but mm-hmm. I remember us talking about that.
So whose idea was that? Which one first got excited about it?
You know, the development process was, it was the same as, and this is really interesting, I think, because with a lot of developments, you know, you and I, Clint, have worked on a lot of things, and I'll say, well, you know, oh, I don't even know what a good example is. Let's just use, let's talk in generalities. Well, you know, here's our problem. X is our problem. And you say, well, why don't you try Y? This would be good. And then I could come right back to you and say, hey, look, I tried Y, and that works really good. But now that I see Y, well, what about Z right here? And mm-hmm. so it's a back and forth effort. And I think that's what really happened, isn't mm-hmm. it, Bailey?
Yeah.
I think it's just a back and forth effort, and all of a sudden you get two or three light bulbs stacked, you know, moments stacked on top of each other, and all of a sudden a product develops from there. And so that's really kind of interesting, I think, is how that.
You know. Now, do you think you're pretty mechanically inclined? On a general, I mean, from you help work on all this stuff here on the farm.
Yes, sir. I mean, I've learned a good bit about just a little bit of mechanic stuff from working on a farm and all that, and then with this plasma cutter I've learned a good bit about how to rig some stuff up, but
rig it up.
Well, what guys, what Travis, what's your plan? You're in school now, right?
Yeah, sadly. Right, I tell you. 5 days a week, 7 hours a day.
What are you studying?
I was studying business, but then I kind of failed it. So I switched over to something easier. It's industrial maintenance. So that's what I'm into now, and it's,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But,
you're gonna, I got tickled. You know, he welded all through high school, mm-hmm. which is what he's getting ready to find out what he's going to be working for me on come tomorrow. But and he on the way down here, because no one else knows this, me and Chip did. I've got a pile of metal sitting up in Chip's shop. I mean, a pile of
a
metal.
Big pile.
And part of it is for my farm, which has nothing to do with Travis. This other pile he's looking at, and I go, that's what you're here for. Because I told him, I said, bring some clothes that if you happen to get some weld burns on or something. And he's like, and I, we have him by the short hairs because he wants to hunt. So he can't say no.
That's right.
But, he, you know, because he's already well and really good at it, but I got tickled at him the other day. He's like, can you believe they're making me learn math? And I'm like, well, I'm sure it has something to do with electricity.
Exactly. So that's cool. So, Bailey, you're in school, too.
I am. I'm at the community college up here in Grenada, and I'm in a paramedic class going through it, and hopefully one of these days I'll finally get done with this cardiology that we're going through, and then later on go on into med school or something like
that. And where's that at? Where are you thinking that may be at?
University Medical Center.
Which is?
University Medical Center.
Oh, that's cool. We are... For somebody that may be listening to this from Michigan or Maine or Washington State or wherever, the huge rivalry in Mississippi is Mississippi State and what's the other school? The one up north?
Oxford Junior College,
yeah. Ole Miss and Mississippi State are big-time rivals, and so the where Baylor will probably wind up has to go through the channels through Ole Miss, which is a big-time stink factor. You got to hold your nose.
I mean, generationally, y'all are state.
Oh, yeah,
Your dad went.
I graduated from state. My dad graduated from state. We have, for everybody in my family, pretty much has stomped around over there. So, yeah, that's going to be, if he breaks the mold.
I'm going to state this fall.
So yeah. Get some undergraduate stuff. Right. It'll work out. That's right. Oh my! But
they're a little. A little shy, it seems like, on their answers. Mm-hmm. You when we came in the shop, I couldn't help but notice you've got like the Cadillac of Cadillac coyote pens. And you've been live market trapping in how long?
Oh wow, we have. It's probably what, 4 or 5 years now, I guess. That pretty much ever since we got back into trapping. We started dallying in the live market a little bit. And first couple of years, we were still, you know, some pretty good fur numbers there. So we were live market and fur trapping. But last 2 or 3 years, two especially, been straight live market.
And you're in the co-op, which you've had a show on, so we won't get into all that.
Yep.
But I thought it might be fun that I'm going to play like I know nothing about the live market.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a coyote trapper. And what would, if I was wanting to go somewhere or live somewhere that had a live market, you know, you're still catching the coyote,
mm-hmm.
but what is, besides, you know, you're selling them live, what other types of equipment or what are some things you've learned that is different than just the fur trapping?
Mm-hmm. I'll be more than happy to answer that. And actually, as I do, by the way, I want you to help answer this too, because we do a bunch of stuff. That's going to be exactly the answer of his question, especially in regard to what's different. We still got to catch the coyote. That's the number one thing. What becomes much more important is if I'm going to sell that coyote live, I'm selling him to fox pens. So we call them fox pens or coyote pens now. But it's a huge market across the country for these houndsmen to run the dogs, you know, and they're, you know, release these coyotes into the pens, and so that's kind of the game, and there's big money there that, you know, those folks spend thousands and thousands of dollars on those dogs, and and really, you know, really a huge deal there. So that's the function. That's why there is a live market. So what they want in that product or that live coyote is they want him to be able to run. They want, you know, the idea is not for the dogs to catch the coyotes. The, you know, the coyotes lives happily ever after. They just get a little exercise in the meantime. Well, part of that, they need to have good clean feet. They don't need to have cuts on their feet. And that's where I think I find myself and a lot of other guys that are in the live market really putting our focus and our efforts on. You know, there's a lot of traps out there, and without going into any specific one, there's some traps out there that have really, really good, the trap that I use, and I actually will pick on that particular one. My go-to trap right now is a Bridger 3 Dogless. I like the trap. It's a well-designed trap. It's a well-put-together trap. There's a lot of things I really like about it. There's a little bit I don't like about it, like how Bridger leaves the inside jaws of that sharp on the edge. I don't like that at all. So we go through great pains to round that off, and we've even built a jig on our press that will hold that open so we can round that jaw, much take the sharp edge off, is what I'm trying to say. So that we don't cut the coyote when we get him. The point that if we do have any cuts at all, when we get the coyote out of the trap, we'll literally take triple antibiotic ointment that you buy in the pharmacy section at Walmart. That's where I get it, just like Neosporin or any triple antibiotic ointment. And I will make sure that goes in. And the cuts that I'm getting anymore are very, very, very mild, you know, next to none. But occasionally you still will get a cut. And we're steady. I'm experimenting with a couple of different things now. There's some guys out in New Mexico that are in this and that I follow. And they've done a lot of things, even from the point of taking jaws out of one trap and putting in another trap. And I've done some of that too. So we're getting real creative and coming up with a bunch of different ideas. And even looking at a new style of trap right now. I've got some out there that we looked at just a few minutes ago that I got to build some pans for those. And so all kind of stuff that we do just for that very reason, so that we don't have cuts on these coyotes.
So what you brought up a couple of things real quick. This, like I said, I know nothing about the live market mm-hmm. here, so I'm going to play someone that's looking at this. You're selling them at a fox pen. How does somebody find a fox pen?
You know, that's a real interesting question. That's something that we had issues with. I remember Bradley, you remember the first two cats when we started?
Yeah, I sure do.
You tell that story real quick.
And we caught one or two, and then I heard my buddies talking about they were about to go run their dogs and the fox hunt and all that, and I knew that folks were selling coats to them and all that, and we finally got the fella's number, and of course we called him about the day or two after the hunt, and he didn't need none then.
That's right. So just finding the place to sell them, I would suggest finding somebody to sell them before you go trapping. That's what we did, and we actually wound up had to take those coyotes out of where we were holding them in the holding pen and dispatch them, and they went on stretchers. But after we had taken care of them for about 2 weeks and couldn't find a buyer.
See, business principles go cross. You don't ever build something to have a customer.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Anymore, I've been shocked at how many pens there actually are across the country. There seem to be, across the South, it's big. I don't know that I've heard of any pens in Texas, but I know Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida. I know, I'm not 100% sure on Florida.
You can't put a live coyote in a truck in Texas, so I doubt they have.
Okay, all right. Well, I know there are pens in the rest of the southern tier states across, and I'm not 100% sure of Florida, but I know the rest of them there are. Up the eastern seaboard, up through the Carolinas, I know that there's live market guys up there. Actually, sold some pens to a guy in North Carolina yesterday that was trapped for live market. So
in Hines, Virginia, that I know of.
Okay, yeah, so there's several states. I mean, if you add those up, I'm guessing we're 8, 10, 12 states at least that have this option. So to get back to your original question, you don't know much about a live market, hypothetically, then today what we're looking at, what's a coyote, the best coyote coming off a stretcher somewhere? $12, $15 maybe?
Well, the last keep talking. I'm going to pull up. Okay. Jeff sent me a thing from Napa. It was actually pretty shocking.
Really? Well, good. Hopefully it's a little better than what I'm afraid of. But I don't know, the live market, we're at $50 right now with our co-op, our buying group. We pull our coats together so that our buyers can buy several at a time. In other words, it may take me a week to catch, five coyotes, but our buyer may want 25. Well, if there's five of us and we're all catching 25 a week, now we can get rid of these coyotes every week, because we don't like to just hold them, because the longer you hold them, it's just easier to get rid of them. You got to feed them, you got to water them, you got to take care of them. They're just like a
dog.
That's right. Exactly. So,
see, I don't know from this thing he sent me if this is Fur Harvesters North America, but when I look at coyotes, 4,395 were there, 33% sold. So it's not the best, but the average was $50.
Oh, wow.
Tops 90. So wow. That's not as bad as I was mm-hmm. expecting it to be.
Yeah.
But you only sold one out of three.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep that in mind.
That's right. But still, the numbers part of that's not bad. $50 average is not bad, even of the ones that did sell. In fact, I would think that probably will be a little better than a typical.
And you got to think, probably realistically, 30% of the stuff that tries to go through for a long-haired fur market like coyotes should mm-hmm. never be sent to an auction.
Right. Well, that's the cool part about the live market, because if I can take that coyote to him and he's healthy and he's got clean feet, no cuts, I can sell all of them, 100% of them, and I know what I'm getting to start with. It's kind of like what you just said. You need to have the market before you build the product. Well, the market is there. Through the coyote co-op, we sold, I'm going to forget my number, but it's in the upper 900s, 990, 992, something like that, coyotes through all of us in the co-op last year. And this year we had one of our main buyers, one. We sell to 12 or 15 different pens around. Maybe even more than that. I don't do a lot of the lining up for the sales, but another guy in the co-op handles that. But one particular guy said he would take up to 2,000 if we could catch them this year. We can't catch that many, so there's no way that we can fulfill the demand that's out there. There's other guys that are even getting more money than that. They're having to go back to snares where there's the buyers know they're not taking any chances on anything with. Sore feet but the snare market usually commands a little bit more money than even what we're getting with the foot. We can offset that though with production.
So your state doesn't have a list of the pens?
I'm sure there's a list published somewhere. Here again, I'm in this buying group, and the way that works is these buyers all know our go-to guy. Like you mentioned earlier, I had an interview with David, I think it was last year on Trapper Radio, and we go through the ins and outs of that, and David's the one that lines those up. They all call him, and so David kind of keeps a running total. We need we got an order of 10 to this guy. He needs them next Tuesday. The following Saturday, this other guy needs 25, and so he kind of lines that up and coordinates that for all of us that are selling through the co-op.
Okay, the two of the things that just caught my attention, you're putting Neosporin or triple antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing that because you think it's the best thing to do, or is that like some of the states where you have to give them shots where you can sell them?
No, we don't have any regulations here again in Mississippi. And in Mississippi, we got to have our trapper's license, and we cannot catch the governor. Other than that, we can do whatever, which I really like that. We are one of the more liberal states, maybe the most liberal state as far as our trap regulations and trap laws. But no, we don't have to do, we're not forced or mandated to do anything medically to the coyotes once we do them, so long as they're sold in state. Now, if we transport that coyote out of state, I think there's legal ways in which you can do that, but you've got to go through a lot of red tape there. You do have to have them vet certified. I know that. I think there may be some medications that they have to have administered, maybe even tested for other diseases like rabies or something.
Well, I mean, I don't know anything about live market, but let's just say that I did. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to that conversation. Do not be tempted if you live close to a state that has live market and you don't. If you get crossing that line, you're going to be put under the Lacey Act, which is a felony, and
absolutely,
they will fry you.
It is not worth it, guys. It is. Do not be tempted by that at all. If you live in a state that does have it, it's certainly worth exploring. If it's not, do not try to take those coyotes across the state line, at least without going through the red tape and all. But I think what you're going to get to, I had this discussion at one of the shows that we were at this fall. Guy lived in a state that did not have a live market. His neighboring state did, and he wanted to explore that, and he checked on it. It was cost prohibitive. It was going to be, it was something like $100 a coyote to get all the permits to be able to take them across the state lines to sell them for $50. Those are not the exact numbers, but something similar. That's the rough idea.
That's a very liberal business model. It's got to work.
Yeah, that's right. Need a bigger truck, you know. Let's just do more of it.
The other thing, Chip, is the criteria for the trap. What are you looking? I mean, what I don't want to have happen, somebody come somewhere like Mississippi, they find a buyer, they just bring, and I'm not picking on anything, but say a stock number 3 Duke, mm-hmm, or, mm-hmm, or old Victor 175 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for in a trap to at least give you the advantage that you're looking for?
Well, without getting into the, I'm going to stay really, really close to what your question is, because you could talk for 3 hours on that. I'm trying not to talk about, but I think it's important to lead with this. I'm trying not to talk about what's a coyote trap versus what's not a coyote trap.
Right,
and there's a lot of guys that could, you know, that catch coyotes and have caught them in 1.5s, but I prefer a 3. Now, I think you can, having said that, you get more damage, I think, in the smaller traps like that than you do the bigger traps. I think you get less damage the bigger the traps are. So that's one thing that I look at. To me personally, a number 3 is the minimum size. The bigger is better, and that's not just because I own Expand-A-Pan. I like bigger traps. I think the heavier weight, I think the coyotes, our cats or whatever I'm catching, I think they fight it much less. I think when they have that big weight on the end of their leg, I think they fight it, 10, 15, 20 seconds, and I think they lay down. I mean, all of a sudden it's, I say I can't go anywhere. I've got this big old weight on me, and I think that they kind of give up a lot quicker than they do if they had, if they had less. Well, the less he fights, the less he pulls. So that's one thing, the size of the trap. The next thing is the jaws. I like a rounded jaw. I know there's a lot of guys that are forced into padded jaws, especially when you get to bigger traps. You guys in Tennessee have to run padded jaws, I think, especially on your bigger traps like that.
Any traps on dry ground.
Really, wow. See, there again, that's so foreign to me. That was...
It's foreign to me too.
Yeah,
I'll not go there.
Exactly. So the cast iron jaws, like say is on MB550s, like Coyote Cuff 33s. Those cast iron jaws seem to offer a big wide, wider than even laminates. Now, on laminations, I'm a big fan of laminations. The wider is absolutely better on the jaw itself. So what I'm talking about, guys, is from the inside all the way to the outside. A lot of times it's much easier to lamp to just do outside laminations, and that's okay. If you're gonna do them yourself, the bigger laminations you can get for a live market, I think the better off you are. A lot of times you can, the kits are small, like maybe 5/16. You can actually use 1/4 inch and have a wider lamination. I think that's real important. But the wider you get, the less cuts you get. And then the other thing too that I'd like to add right there is swivels. There's no excuse or no substitute is what I was trying to say for swivels. The more the merrier. The more swivels that you can get on there, the less damage I think that you have on that coyote.
Well, one thing that I've noticed, two things with if I've ever done any live market trapping, one of the things I would have noticed is the trap strength, you get less damage to me if it's stronger because you don't get the foot moving back and forth, mm-hmm, which was one of the big issues with the old, when they first came out with our laws, when we had the stock number 3 Victor soft catches, that would even cut the foot because they could just run it back and forth. Mm-hmm.
You get a sawing action, I think.
Yeah, and like the three bridgers, if you're using the four coils, is that what you're using?
Absolutely, yep.
That foot ain't moving.
Yeah.
hair
That's
once
right.
it gets caught. And one thing that really blew me away is we had a bunch of modified number three Victors when me and Ed Blue came down to Mississippi over in Sharkiness, Quinn County. Mm-hmm. We got tremendous amount of damage with those traps. I mean, it was driving us insane. We had some MJ600s, which I know a lot of people don't use anymore, but it's super strong, super wide jaws, and the damage totally went away. So I'm thinking it had something to do with the mud or the sand content in the gumbo or something was going on. So you know, a trapper's got to observe what he's, wherever he's at, wherever he's going, and be able to adjust from that.
Right.
Because if we'd have just stuck with the threes, we'd have been in bad, bad shape.
Exactly. Well, I also think that we owe it to what we're, you know, to what we're trapping for, to have the, to care enough to take the to make the modifications that are necessary to avoid that. I mean, you know, not to say it's a bad thing to, that you see damage, but when you do see damage, don't be so proud that you can't go and fix that damage. Correct it. Make the modification.
Well, I think the goal on trappers anyway should be to figure out ways to have zero damage to take that away from anybody that says trapping is cruel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Exactly. I completely agree with that. Now, I will say this. If I was not in the live market, I probably wouldn't go quite to the extreme that I do now because, you know, if he's going to get a 22, he's going to get a 22. So, you know, but what we're trying to do, and so I'd hate for a guy that's not in the live market to take what I'm saying, because we are going to the 10th degree, all the way to we're literally, we're taking jaws out of stock traps and taking other jaws and putting in them. And I mean, this is crazy, crazy wild kind of stuff that we're doing to make sure we have zero cuts. Now, you know, I'm doing this because I had probably a 1/16th inch cut that was repeated. I was seeing this several times over and over and over again. Most of the times my buyers would never notice this because we would be filling them full of triple antibiotic ointment. We'd be, you know, we'd be doctoring on by the time 3 or 4 days rolled around, cavity's foot's completely healed up. The buyers don't, I mean, there is no damage, it's healed. So we would not be going through, I don't think that the cavity was suffering at all through that. It was just, it's no different than, you know, I've got a couple of little bangs on my fingers just from working. I mean, it's not like, you know, my fingers are going to fall off. So it's, I think that's the same thing. So I wouldn't want a guy, say, in Colorado that, you know, that doesn't have a live market to think, oh, well, I've got to go and, you know, put one inch laminations on all my traps or whatever, because, common sense.
So what about handling the coyote? Because that's going to be the biggie that if you're not set up for it, that can be the work. It'll be a massive headache.
Absolutely. Absolutely. a couple of things starting at the catch. We pull up on them. You know, we use a catch pole. There's a whole bunch of different catch poles out there. I like the catch all. I know you use the catch all. It's got a spring loaded release that's invaluable to, because just as important as getting that noose around his neck as it is turning, it's getting it off of his neck too. So that can be, I've been present when two people have gotten bit. Luckily it was not me or Bailey one, but you were here when Ronnie got bit, right?
No.
You weren't? Okay, anyway, it's, yeah, you gotta be careful. You absolutely gotta be careful. The main thing is stay away from his mouth. And that seems oversimplified, but literally if you stay away from his mouth, you won't get bit. So, you walk up to him and generally speaking, a coyote will cower down. He's going to act bad. Reminds me of a big old bully a lot of times. You know, you walk up to him and he's growling and he's snapping and he can be barking, he can be howling, he can be bad until you walk up there and you get him cornered up and then he lays down. And he's a sissy after that. He really is.
Kind of like a liberal.
Exactly. Did you see that with yours, Travis?
He was actually calm. I figured he'd be, you know, all barking and stuff, but no, he just calmed down.
You were
stuff.
Disappointed, weren't you?
Well, I mean, No, I was happy that I caught something, you know, but I did kind of want a little, rah, you know.
I think some of that may come with being 18. Need a little rah there. So
I like a little bit of fire in them.
But. What would you say? I mean, by the way, you catch as many carrots as I do. What would you say, 50% of them are mean, 50 or not? Or is it more skewed to...
I think it's more a little bit more of them that'll cower down rather than just keep on fighting through it. But on average, most of them will just cower down whenever you get them cornered up and all that.
If I had to guess my numbers, I'm fixing to ask you, Clint, the same question. I'm going to say, if I had to pick a number, and I've not kept up with this, so this is not scientific, but I'm going to say 70% of the coyotes.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Really?
Yeah.
That I walk up to cower down.
Mm-hmm.
And then 30% of them act mean. Yeah.
And about 2% of them will try to eat you from the moment you get there to you get them turned loose in somebody else's pen.
You know, if he is that 2%er that's mean when he goes in the holding pen, he's also going to be that 2%er that's mean when you're trying to feed him, and he's also going to be that 2%er that's mean when you try to sell him.
Which makes me wonder on those, is that what the pens want?
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a feeling it's really not.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever talked to your buyers about that?
Yeah, I think it's the numbers are so few. No, I've not, to answer your question. I think the numbers are so few that it would be hard for them to gauge that, I'm almost thinking. I don't know. But I would agree with you. I would think that they would probably want the more submissive ones that would, you know, that would
just run.
Just run. That's right. That's right. So I know occasionally. Well, appreciate it too.
Yeah.
I know occasionally. Well, I just lost my train of thought there. I'm not sure. Well, let me kind of go back into, to getting them out. So what we do, and we kind of started down our bunny trail there, but once I get the head catcher on him, I'll just gently pin him to the ground with the head catcher. It's no, usually I'm real verbal with them. I don't know, obviously they cannot understand English, but I think there's some kind of dominance that I put over them when I'm talking to them. And it's just almost just like a casual conversation. If somebody was hiding in the bushes watching me, they'd probably think I'd lost my mind. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, just...
You've been with me when I'm talking to animals.
Yeah. I mean, it's... So if I was going to act it out here, I said, all right, bud, this is, you know, kind of a tough night last night, huh? You got my trap. I'm just going to put this right over your neck here and tighten it down. A lot of times I won't even tighten it all the way down, but I'm speaking to him. I'm talking to him all the way. And so I get him kind of pushed to the ground. And I just hold him there, and I would take the trap off his foot, and from that point, I usually grab him by either I try it, or I'd love to grab him by both back legs, and just kind of pick him up from between the head catcher and their back legs, and just go straight into the pen, into the holding pen with them. Now, I keep a holding pen with me all the time. Used to, I've got a little bit more fancy kind of stuff now that we've built, but I used to just use regular plastic dog boxes like folks will, take their labs around town and, but now I've got, some holding pens. So that'll get me from the trap line back home. And I may have four, hopefully as the more the merrier, whatever I caught that day, but I'll have multiple coats in the holding pen, and I'll go from there to when I get actually the transport pen is a better way to say that, to the holding pen. And that's kind of what you started the whole conversation off with, what I just got through building, was the holding pen. And it's a much bigger pen. The coyote's got room because they may be in that thing for 2 or 3, 4 days until we sell them. But they got a lot more room in there. It's don't think dog box here. This is dog box times 20.
It's like a 16-foot trailer.
yeah, exactly. And it's different compartments there. I can separate fox. I can separate males from females. I don't know why you need to, but I can do whatever I wanted to. There's basically got three compartments there that you can do. So,
well, about the dominance, you'll just appreciate this story, I believe. Red Edgeman was well known in trapping. He's long gone now. And when I met him, he was in his 80s. And he trapped all the way back in the Great Depression as a kid. And I went out with him a few times, and we caught a coyote. And he had a ritual that he would do, is he would he wouldn't let you help him because he thought if you ever helped him that he wouldn't be able to do it. And, you know, he'd lose muscle or something. So you just had to sit back and watch. And at 80 years old, you're not very weak or fast. But his theory was when you put the coyote in the catch pole and you can get him down, you take your glove off and you physically put your skin to his fur. He said, all except for maybe one out of a couple hundred, you own that coyote forever after that point. He said, if you have your glove on, it ain't the same. You know, but if you physically touch, he just put his hand on his back and talked to him. And after that point, he literally, at 80 years old, he could manhandle those coyotes with no catch pole after that point, once he got it in the pen the first time. I was amazed.
Wow.
Not saying anybody should try that off that story, but I mean, it definitely seemed to work for him.
I think to try that out, what I'm going to do, Bailey, next time we catch one, I'm just going to let you go pet it and talk to it. Like
okay.
You just let me know how that works out.
Have the camera going.
Yeah, exactly. We'll post a YouTube video. So that's funny.
Well, how long do you leave them in the pen? I mean, there's got to be a point where no problem to
the
they're going to start going downhill.
You know, I've kept them. I caught a big male coyote, and I'm still doing some experiments with this. A lot of guys may have heard the interview that I did with Wayne Derricks out of New Mexico back in the fall. Really, really interesting interview that we did here on Trapper Radio. And one of the takeaways that I had from that interview, he was talking about coyote urine. He didn't spend a lot of time on it during that interview, but he was talking about how he used coyote urine at sets. And he said, in his opinion, that coyote urine comes from one adult alpha male coyote that goes in one bottle, not mixed up. And without arguing that point, I kept one big male dominant coyote this fall. I kept him for probably at least 7 or 8 weeks, but probably more like 10 or 12 before I sold him. But what I was doing, though, I was feeding him coyote food. And what do you mean by coyote food? If I saw a rabbit roadkill, I'd pick that rabbit up. I'd feed him that rabbit. The next day, I tried to pick what I would think that coyote is eating in the wild. Absolutely. Devoured it. The only thing that he would not devour, it would not devour a possum. It would not, you know, they don't like coons, really and truly. They you know, occasionally we got more coon run over than we do anything. It's nothing to see 8 raccoons between here and Grenada, any particular morning. Deer, somebody shoots a deer, deer scraps. Here again, I fed him roadkill pretty much. I don't know, did we ever even, I don't think that particular cow, we never fed him dog food, did we?
I don't think so.
But here again, I don't know if it had anything to do with the quality of urine or not. I was just experimenting. I was just playing with it. I've got all that stuff bottled up right now, and so the jury's still out as to whether that even makes any difference at all. I almost expect probably does not. I think coyote urine is coyote urine, but I was just trying, so I'm gonna run some tests on there just for my benefit, mm-hmm. so I can learn. I mean, that's how you learn, is comparing things. So, but that kind of helps on answer that question. How long can you keep them? I know you can keep them up to 8 or 10 weeks because I've done that, but that's about as long as I ever have. And the only reason I kept that one that long is because he was one of the 2 percenters. He was mean all the way through, and he never did tame down. In the pen, he never tamed down at all. Every time Well, Kathy, it's kind of interesting. I kept them under the shed out here where you could stay dry all the time. But there's equipment parked around there. And he couldn't see you walk out there a lot of times. So you'd hear him. He'd be fighting. he'd be fighting even the middle of the day. I guess he's fighting ghosts. I don't know. But at any rate, so you can keep them a while.
He was practicing when you weren't looking.
I think so. So anyway, good clean water too. So that's a key, and that's one thing that we were talking about earlier is on the back of this pen. I had a little watershed collection idea, because that's something when you get away from, if you're holding pen is away from your home base, like a lot of times we'll We'll trap this farm for a couple, 2 or 3 weeks till we kind of get the easy coyotes off it. And we're not qualified to catch the hard coyotes. All I can do is catch the dumb ones. But we catch the dumb ones here, we'll move 30 miles down the road. We'll move, you know, another 20 miles down the road or whatever to the next farm. And a lot of times you don't have water readily available. So, you know, I have hauled it up out of the creeks and buckets and put it in there for them. So that we had a little way to collect it off the roof of this coyote pen. So that's kind of a neat thing. But clean water is
your permaculture in your coyote pen.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. So, Bailey, you have anything else to add to the live market stuff? What we're doing? I know you're getting all geared up, and you think you're fixing to set the world on fire in Grenada here coming up next month on this live market stuff.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to set one or two up there and go in between classes and try to get something figured out.
Beware of skunks if you're doing that.
Yeah, exactly. That's I'll throw this real quick in, especially with these guys here. I started trapping when I was in high school. One of my best memories of probably one of the worst days I ever had is it hardly ever snows in Mississippi, obviously, once every 2 or 3 years, but it snowed when I was a senior in high school, and just caught my first bobcat ever. And big tall bank creek, the banks were probably 30 feet. The cats could walk out on this bank and look down and catch these birds or whatever that was working the inside of these creek banks, and it was cold. And I was pumped up, and they'd caught a cat the day before, and there's more cat sign there. And I came back, and there was a skunk. I shot the skunk, and I came back, but I didn't get him out because it was, I was running late. So the next day, I said, well, I'll come back and I get skunk. Well, had another skunk, and I had lost track of which trap I was at. I wound up caught a whole family of skunks, but anyway, this is in between. And so I go up here, and the skunk has snow in his fur, and so I'm thinking this has got to be the skunk I shot yesterday. And it wasn't. It was a trap before, but the skunk's dead, right? Because he's got snow in his fur. And so I get down, I bend over, and I start releasing this dead skunk out of my trap, and he sprays, and I get soaked. I mean, it's a direct hit now. I mean, it was I think we burned those clothes, and my truck smelled like skunk for a year after that, I think. So
you know a little bit about skunk, don't you,
Charlie? Oh yeah.
I would think that you guys, it wouldn't bother you as much. You smell it every day like that.
Oh, it bothers me.
Well, like in the shop, like you don't think, I mean, you don't get like disturbed by the smell all the time now. I mean, it's kind of, but when you do 4 to 5 gallons of something like triple X and you're over the bucket and it's like a funnel blowing that stuff up in your face and it's hot and fresh. There's no way that that's enjoyable.
Wow.
I mean, that is, like, you know, what we've been doing is we've been switching off and on. So I've got to suffer through the skunk day, and I'll bottle those. And the next time it's hit, which is what he did last time, he got to do all the skunks. So the next one coming up is my turn.
That's what we should have focused on the first part of this show is does he make you do all the skunks? Well, good deal. But I think it was interesting talking to these guys, especially to kind of get a pulse on the next generation.
We're gonna have to get them be a little more mouthy. We should have had them talking about redneck trucks, which I brought my camera to film. I've heard about this truck. Yeah. Well, with him, moonshiners. You'd never get him to shut up if you started talking about moonshiners.
Really, really. Yeah, I bet you there's a way to probably put the moonshine in the jacked up Chevrolet truck out there. Oh my. But yeah, we'll have to get him to open their mouth a little bit. So
maybe we'll use cattle prods next time.
Exactly. Well, good deal. But well, guys, there's still some time left in the trapping season, so get out there. It's just the end of January, so you still got time to get with it. Looks like maybe these prices are, regardless of what the prices are, get out there and enjoy it. That's what we really do it for. So I think I've said that on every trapping radio show I've ever done.
And it hasn't changed.
That's right. It's still fun. That's the reason we do it. I need to go set some traps right now for my sanity. I just need to go trapping. You know.
Well, put us on the hogs first, and then you go set your traps.
There you go. That's what we're gonna do. We're getting ready to go, and we're gonna have some back straps here by nightfall or a little earlier. So. Well, good deal. Well, guys, I appreciate y'all tuning in, and Travis and Bailey, I appreciate y'all taking time to talk with us on the radio show. We wish you the best in your schooling and your studies and the upcoming months and years to come. So keep working hard. Keep your focus. All right, guys, till next time on Trapper Radio, you guys get out there, have fun, tear them up, and we're signing out. See you soon.